Our next public hearing is change of zone number 1721, Captain's Way Development LLC.
This is an application of Captain's Way Development LLC to amend the comprehensive zoning map from an AR1 agricultural residential district to a GR RPC general residential district residential plan community to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Broadkill 100, Sussex County, containing 154.9 acres more or less, lying north of Route 16, south of Road 231, which is known as Reynolds Pond Road, and 2,400 feet east of Road 226, which is known as Holly Tree Road. The subject site is identified as tax map 2-35, map 5, parcel 5, and 235-13, parcel 2. We received two agency comments, the first one being from the Sussex County Engineering Department. The site is not in a proposed or current county-operated and maintained sanitary sewer district. It is in a north coastal planning area. Conformity to the North Coastal Planning Study or undertaking an amendment will be required. The project proposes to develop using a central community wastewater system handled by Tidewater Environmental Services Incorporated. We recommend that the wastewater system be operated under a long-term contract with a capable wastewater utility. In addition, we recommend they have a wastewater utility provider prior to approving the project. The proposed project is located outside of the environmentally sensitive developing area or growth area where Sussex County expects to provide sewer service. Sussex County requires design and construction of the collection and transmission system to meet Sussex County sewer standards and specifications. A review and approval of the treatment and disposal system by the County Engineering Department is also required, and plan review fees may apply. Disposal fields should not be counted as open space. If the county ever provides sewer service and the project has a CPCN, it is recommended that the treatment system be abandoned and a direct connection made to the county system at the developer's and or owner's expense. If the county ever provides sewer service and the project does not have a CPCN, it is required that the treatment system be abandoned and a direct connection made to the county system at the developer and or owner's expense. And a concept plan is not required, and that was signed by John Ashman, the Director of Utility Planning. From the Sussex Conservation District, they advise that the soils on site are Falsington Sandy Loam, Fort Mott Loamy Sand, Hurlock Sandy Loam, Long Marsh and Indian Town soils, Mullicub Monkey Sandy Loam, Rosedale Loamy Sand, and Woodstown Sandy Loam. With respect to erosion and sediment control, the applicants would be required to follow recommended erosion and sediment control practices during any construction and to maintain vegetation after any construction. It depends on the construction limits. Low-lying areas are subject to flooding, whether a storm flood hazard area would be affected. It would not be necessary for any off-site drainage improvements. It would be necessary for on-site drainage improvements. And they indicate that a tax ditch is affected since one exists down the middle of the property. There is potential to have impacts on the tax ditch. Attached to that was the soil survey guide, an aerial photograph of the site. The applicant submitted an exhibit booklet on September the 7th. Each of you has been provided a copy of that. It included area mobile homes, the recorded final subdivision plan, planning and zoning final record plan approval letter, Department of Ag approval letter, Office of State Fire Marshal approval, DelDOT no objection letter, DelDOT entrance plan approval, Office of the Drinking Water approval, County Engineering Department and Sussex Conservation District approvals. There was a list of qualifications of Pannoni Associates Incorporated, qualifications of Mark Davidson and Doug Berry. There is a copy of the rezoning application and plans, the DLDOT support facilities report, county level service evaluation request form, a DLDOT traffic impact study, final traffic impact study, plus application, the plus review, and the plus comments, and there's a section that addresses the items referenced in 99C of the subdivision ordinance. We received two letters. One was signed by one individual. It makes reference to the number of mobile homes, impacts to Cedar Creek, and concerns about wetlands. That was signed by Kyle Smith. And we received another letter. It was signed by 28 people. They expressed concerns about traffic, commercial use, need, public safety, the change of the plan, development, and possible resale. I've made copies of those letters, and I'll pass those down for your review. They will be made a part of the record. And just, there's currently a recorded 301 lot cluster subdivision that's been approved and recorded. The intent, which you would be looking at tonight, is whether or not the site is suitable for manufactured housing. And that's all I have, unless you have any questions.
All right, sir, we thank you. Just so I'm clear, we're all clear. There's already 301 units approved.
Correct.
This application is for 301 units. It's simply whether or not they're going to be manufactured housing or
whether it would permit manufactured housing, and there is a three-acre area commercial.
Okay. All right. All right, then.
Is our council not participating?
Oh, yeah. Gentlemen, our council is abstaining from participating. We are, at this point, councilless, which should be pretty interesting. But somehow I think we'll get through it. If not, we'll just have to draft somebody out here to our council. And with that, Mr. Davidson, should it be you or the elderly gentleman to your right?
Age goes first. Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, my name is Pret Dyer. I am a member, along with Scott Daly, who is here this evening, of Captain's Way Development, LLC. Mr. Mark Davidson of Pannoni Associates is here as the consulting engineer. As Mr. Abbott indicated, this is a request for a GR, General Residential RPC, Residential Plan Community. The property consists of 154.9 acres. And under the GR designation, the only difference that is mentionable here would be, we believe that this is a unique opportunity to take a existing 301 unit cluster subdivision and to change that into workforce affordable housing. I'd like to direct your attention, if I may, to the map that was part of the booklet. It shows the surrounding area and describes the character of the community, character of the neighborhood. As you probably are aware, towards the rear, and I believe that would be the north side of this property, there's New Market Village manufactured housing community, which is a pre-existing community. There's another group clustering of single wide mobile homes on Spicer Road, and then you will see scattered throughout, as denoted in the boxes, you will see several depictions of the existing single and double wide mobile homes that are presently occupying individual lots in this area. It is for that reason that we think that this change to GR is appropriate. The existing community is representative of the very large number and significant, in fact, large number of manufactured homes that surround this particular site. And we think that there's also a unique ability here to take this cluster subdivision and apply the GRRPC. A significant factor for that is the proximity to an east-west corridor. The major thoroughfare, as you're aware, 16, connects eastern Sussex in an east-west manner. That provides a unique setting for transportation, a unique setting for access to Route 1 and 113. In fact, we have approval from the previous subdivision for a DART bus. It's along Route 303, which goes from Dover to Georgetown via Milford and Milton. And I think the predominance of the mass transport, mass transit and public transportation, coupled with the proximity of this site on the east-west thoroughfare, distinguishes this project from other subdivisions and allows the application of the GRRPC to be appropriate. As you gentlemen are aware, the RPC ordinance itself encourages large-scale developments as a means of creating a superior living environment. And through that, there has to be design ingenuity while protecting the existing and future developments and achieving the goals of the comprehensive plan. In a bit, I'm going to review exactly what aspects of the comprehensive plan are, in fact, going to be met as a result of this application. The RPC allows commercial uses of convenience and necessity to the development as a whole. And again, the RPC ordinance provides for 1 acre per 100 dwelling units. So we have asked for 3 acres based upon the 301 units. And the uses for that would be such as a sales office for the mobile homes that would be sold within this community, and potentially convenience items and perhaps even service services that would be marketed to the residents of the community. Again, the predominance of the manufactured homes already in the area, its proximity to Route 16 as a major thoroughfare, and the public transportation are the basis that we think that council, that the Planning Commission and council could apply this request for GR. The project characteristics will be reviewed at this time by Mr. Davidson of Pannoni Associates.
Good evening. I'm Mark Davidson of Pannoni Associates, Milton, Delaware. Before I get started, I'd just like to make a couple of clarifications. In the booklet, under the chapter, the last chapter, we talked, there's under the code notes of 99-9C, I had noticed today that we put in two different copies, and the updated copy is the current copy of the 99-C, so our responses to those 17 items would be the updated. The first one just needs to simply be removed from the booklet and has, and again, that was mistakenly put in there. Second, Mr. Abbott mentioned from some comments from the Sussex Conservation District, and we do have approval from them to construct the stormwater on site. They mentioned something about a tax ditch. There is no tax ditches on this site, so that was in their report, and I'm not sure. I don't have a copy of that, so I'm not quite sure exactly what they were referring to as far as a tax ditch, but there are no tax ditches within the project of this subdivision. And again, it was stated that this is an approved subdivision. It's recorded. In the booklet, I placed a cover page under the approvals. It's the first drawing. It's the cover page, and it outlines that this subdivision was recorded. So we did get all agency approvals and met the requirements for recordation. The subdivision's not changing as far as layout. We're 301 lots, the roads are the same, entrance is the same. Stormwater management took into context the conservation type design that we had proposed in the initial application for Captain's Way. That's what was approved. We're utilizing the existing wetlands that are on site. We're utilizing some of the existing wooded areas to help mitigate stormwater management, and that's what was submitted to the conservation district and what was approved. As Mr. Dyer stated, the entrance plan was approved for the 301 lot subdivision. I can tell you under the DelDOT section, you can read their report. They're stating that a manufactured home park generates less traffic than a residential subdivision. That was one of the reasons why they decided that an additional traffic impact study was not needed. We did do a traffic impact study, and we met all the requirements under that TIS, and that's why we got the approval from DelDOT. There is one change that we are asking for as far as individual lot setbacks for each individual lot. Again, this was designed under the cluster, which was 7,500 square foot lots. The RPC, the minimum lot size, is 7,500 square foot lots. Our approximate or our average lot size is 75 by 100. With that, under the cluster, the setbacks are 25 foot fronts, 10 side, 10 rear. What we're asking for here, and I provided a table, a typical detail on the S2, the second sheet, the key sheet of the package that we submitted. And what we're asking for is with the manufactured homes, whether they are single wides or double wides, with the sizes that they do come in, what we're asking for on that is for a single wide lot, we were asking to have a 12-foot front setback, 10-foot side yards, and a 5-foot. That would, with that, with the average lot size being 100 foot in depth, that would allow for an 80-foot long by 16-foot wide mobile home or manufactured home. The second is for a double wide manufactured home, and we're asking that. We're going to hold to the front setback of 25 feet, which is under the cluster again, and then 10-foot rear yard, and we're asking for 5-foot side yard. And again, what that does is that allows us to place in a 65-foot long, double-wide manufactured home. Rather than go through all the items in 99-9C, they are outlined. And again, as Mr. Abbott stated, we did go to the plus, and we answered those questions. We returned the plus letter back to the state planning office. And that's all I have.
I would like to address now the aspects of the comprehensive plan. As I'm sure you're aware, the most recent version of the comp plan states that Sussex County has low to moderate income working households that are hit hardest by the increase in the cost of home prices and apartment rentals. The purpose of manufactured housing, according to the comprehensive plan, is to recognize, and this is a quote, that the average cost per square foot of manufactured homes is less than half of the site-built homes. And in fact, Mr. Daly later is going to provide an example that shows that it's 25% in this particular example. The comprehensive plan says that yet despite sometimes disparaging stereotypes, properly built and well-managed manufactured home communities grow in value and can be community assets. It also goes on to say that the county has a strong market for these units considering the problem that many local workforce members have affording local home prices. In 2007, 24.5% of all homes in Sussex County were manufactured homes, equating to 20% of the county's total population. As you're also aware, Sussex County permits a mobile home on a 3/4 acre lot. And the comprehensive plan says that Due to the improvements in durability and quality in manufactured homes, and with the lower lot size, that manufactured housing is now more feasible and affordable in Sussex County. I would submit to you that in this instance, with this subdivision already being approved for 7,500 square foot lots, that Sussex County's comprehensive plan provides and recognizes that quality homes can and affordable communities can exist under the correct design and direction. It also goes on to state that even though the market cooled in 2006 and 7, and since then, of course, the shortage of affordability remains a very big problem to low and moderate income households in Sussex County, including residents with full-time year-round jobs. The housing goals, objectives, and strategies section of the comp plan says that the goal is to facilitate decent, safe, and sanitary housing for low and moderate income people throughout Sussex County. In fact, objective two states that to encourage manufactured homes as an affordable housing tool, Sussex County will continue to support manufactured home ownership throughout the county as an affordable housing alternative. The comp plan under the future land use element says that federal law effectively states that the county must allow manufactured homes whenever conventionally built single-family detached homes are permitted. Federal law governs the construction details and related specifications to which manufactured homes must be built. Again, this project would afford the opportunity to have a well-designed. The design of this project has already met the quality standards for a cluster subdivision. Now, if it were a GR, then you would not have to have the percentage of open space that this project already has. But because we're using the same layout, it does have those attributes. The ability for Sussex County here is to incorporate what is very clearly delineated as the objective of providing affordable housing to workforce and low to moderate income individuals who reside in Sussex County. Section 3 on page 330, it says, within these limitations, Sussex County encourages using manufactured homes as one way to help provide affordable housing, especially in restricted areas close, in residential areas close to job centers. The county supports manufactured housing as an effective way to help meet the needs of moderate income people trying to become homeowners. Sussex County will closely examine potential revisions to county regulations. At this time, we have provided an example of a purchase of a home versus a mobile home that would be permitted under the GRRPC, whereby you would have two options. The first option would be a ground rent situation for the lot, and the individual would come in and buy the home and own the home and place the home on the lot. That would be example number one. The second example would be we are considering having another opportunity if someone would not qualify for the purchase of the home, that we are considering putting together an investment opportunity where the resident would come in as a tenant and ground lease the lot and also lease the home that would be owned by a separate investor, and the economics would be essentially the same. It would provide an opportunity for someone to have home ownership on a lease lot or to have the ability to go into a new home on a lease lot in a new product manufactured home. And Mr. Daly will very briefly review that.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, good evening. My name is Scott Daly. I'm a member of Captain's Way Development, LLC. I'm also a...
copies.
Oh, they only need one. I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm also a the managing partner of a company called Capstone Homes. We build residential homes mostly through eastern Sussex, a lot in the Milton, Lewis, Milford area, and I'm a licensed realtor. So what I wanted to do is briefly break down some of the things, some of these numbers that we've arrived at. A lot of this is derived out of the county code, section 72, under Article 1 there, which is covering the moderately priced housing units, the MPHUs. The intent in section 72.2 says, quote, that the that they're looking to stimulate the Sussex County's residents and workforce, stimulating the provision of housing for residents with moderate incomes, as Mr. Dyer mentioned. What I have is basically a breakdown between an FHA purchase of a lot home package at the price of $170,000, which I think is close to what the market for a home would go in that location. There is less expensive housing available in Sussex County that you could purchase. However, you have to take into effect the transportation location, that the predominance of the jobs of someone in this income range would have are probably located close to the beach. So factoring traffic and travel, and especially with the price of fuel at this point, we think having people that be able to live closer to work and have access to public transportation is a good thing. The median family income, this will come into play here in a little bit, for I believe a family of four, according to HUD, is $62,600 for someone who lives in Sussex County, according to their website. I didn't do anything except Google that. But so let me break down some of these things for you. If you purchase the lot home, it's $170,000. We figured $50,000 for the lot, $120,000 for the house. That would be an inclusive package, honestly. Oh, I'm sorry. Looked like you were going to say something. That would include the impact fees, permits, all that, and we're figuring a 1,400 square foot house, and that price is probably tight when you factor in site prep if you need to clear the lot, etc. If they went and got an FHA loan, the minimum down payment for an FHA loan is 3.5%. They'd pay 1.5% of the transfer tax, assuming that they bought from a reputable builder that splits the transfer tax, which is not a 100% common practice in new construction, but it is that is in my experience. FHA is going to require 1.75% percent upfront PMI payment at settlement, and then we figured about 1% in general closing costs, title insurance, appraisal fees, flood certifications. If you've seen a settlement sheet recently, that figure is certainly low, if anything else. Their monthly payment then on the amount borrowed, which would be $164,050 at 4%, which is 30-year fixed, would be $783.20. You pay 1.25% of FHI private mortgage insurance annually. We figure taxes, insurance, we just kind of ballpark that. So the grand total you're looking at is $1,134.09 per month would be to own that home. If you factored in a 30% housing to income ratio, again, article or section 72 of the code references that people can be in a distressed situation when they're having to spend more than 30% of their monthly income on housing. That would result in someone having a minimum income of $45,363.60, which is 72% of median income. Now, in the real world, this assumes that they qualify for this loan because they have absolutely no other debts and a credit score over 720. I can tell you from real world experience, finding that person that doesn't have also a car payment or student loan payments or anything like that, that's all going to affect the affordability because it's going to affect their financeability. So there are very few of these people that have a very clean balance sheet in existence. On the other side, briefly, is a manufactured home which could be purchased for $30,000. The lot wouldn't be transferred but would be rented at $400 a month. The home would be similar size, finishes, and square footage, similar energy efficiency. They have to pay about 10% down and a registration fee of 2.75%. When you add up the payment, which assumes imperfect credit, it's a 9% loan. And insurance, they'd be looking at $703.85. which if you took that same 30% ratio, they only have to be making $28,154, which is 45% of median income for a family of four. The code references in Section 72, again, that the average, and this is a state average of Delaware, a resident needs to make $16.61 an hour. Annually, if they work 40 hours a week and take 2 weeks off a year, they'd be making $32,200. So they have new affordable housing under our guidelines. Whereas in any other scenario, someone that's making that established state rate is not able to afford a new home. And so we think that this, being able to have someone that can, in theory, have 45% of county median income for a family of four to get into a new residence in a well-designed community is a benefit to everyone. That affordable housing is a strong need. We're not requiring any involvement or subsidies from state, federal, local governments. We don't have to get involved in the MPHU process that the county has, which is resource intensive for the county because of the vetting process and of the resales and of the monitoring and all that. This monitors itself. And so that's our breakdown of being able to get to someone at 45% of median income. Thank you for your time.
In conclusion, I would like to submit a finding of fact. We believe it's important to point out once again, and not to belabor the point, but to indicate that that we think that this property is uniquely situated, and not all previous subdivisions would be, to enjoy the benefits of this rezoning to GRRPC. And the reasons which we stated before are, given the proximity to the east-west corridor, which again, transportation and employment, as you're all aware, is a very significant factor. When you add the DART service for the bus, that also provides an alternative means for people to access their employment opportunities. And I think also that given the large number of single and double wides in this particular area, that it is obvious that this would not change the character of the community. Would in fact, as the comprehensive plan has indicated, that it would become an asset in the community. A well-maintained new manufactured housing community with the unique design which was previously implemented through the cluster ordinance does in fact provide an incredible opportunity for affordability, but also the meets all the design standards. And really would provide an opportunity for the residents and the workforce of Sussex County to enjoy. We do have a 100-foot buffer along the majority of the adjoining properties, but not all. This buffer serves as a separation to protect the adjoining lands, some of which are in Ag Pres and some of which are owned by the Nature Conservancy and the Ponders Tract. And I have reached out to the Nature Conservancy and indicated to them that as a condition to this rezoning that we would, that we would be willing and in fact desirous of placing a approximately 26-acre conservation easement in their favor for that. This would be in lieu of the previous subdivision had a payment for disturbed acreage. And given the low to moderate income tenants and the residents who would reside here, that they would not be able to bear the cost of that per acre disturbance figure for the that was being offered for a market subdivision. Obviously, even the comparison that Mr. Daly reviewed in today's world with a 50,000 square foot lot and $120,000 home and a 50,000 $1 million lot at $170,000, we do believe that the comparison of this, again, the rental opportunity for just the lot or the rental opportunity for the lot and a manufactured home on that does provide a unique opportunity and does fall squarely within those parameters of the comprehensive plan. The GRRPC would not adversely affect the nearby uses or negatively impact the neighboring property values. Again, the significance of that statement is that the property has been approved and has permits to be able to construct 301 single-family homes. The difference here, again, is under the federal guidelines, is it's a home that's built, a stick-built home, or a home that is built in a factory that would be, under the code, not considered to be a manufactured home. The only difference in this case, again, is this home will be manufactured under the federal guidelines, and it's a different building code. We also believe that the proposed project is located adjacent to other developed properties, including the nearby trailer manufactured housing park and a gas station. And I think that the opportunity to provide under the code the 3 acres for commercial convenient use, again, for the sale of the homes and or for convenience or perhaps for some type of a service would also be consistent with the neighborhood. Based upon those reasons, we would respectfully request that the commission would act favorably upon this change of zone request.
All right, sir. Let's see if anyone on the commission has any questions for you. And this time, we really will start with Mr. Burton.
Well, I just caught me off guard on that last one, but I'm in gear now. The Shane, you mentioned that there is sewer hookup here, or they will have to do it if it comes.
There's no county sewer right now, but if they ever, if it ever becomes available, they would have to connect to it.
Is that is there a plan for that? Are they reaching out that far?
Right now, they stated it's just in the North Coastal Planning Area study.
Sure.
It's not available at this time.
And the tax ditch is, there is no tax ditch.
If there's a tax ditch, we're not aware of it. It wasn't raised the last time. There is a, I'll let Mr. Davidson describe it.
There are two. There's a branch and a ditch on the site.
The ditch being here, and then South Ridge branch is here. There are no tax ditches.
Okay, and you are planning to cross that, both of them?
That's correct.
And then the boat.
Yeah, we've designed two bridges.
Okay.
To cross each one with that way, there was no disturbance to any wetlands whatsoever.
Okay. Is there any lots within those wetlands that run along?
We have a 60-foot buffer from all wetlands on site.
That's the hatched area that you see on the plans. So we're a minimum 60 feet from all wetlands on site. And again, there's no disturbance to any wetlands, even with the crossings.
Okay. You mentioned workforce. I'll go back to you, Brent. If it mentioned a workforce affordable housing, so this would be the range that Mr. Daly talked about. This is what would be the price range of of these homes.
And I think that something that I failed to mention, I think that's a very good point, is The MPHU ordinance, the purpose of that obviously is to provide moderate income housing. And then the rental program is to provide low to moderate rental properties. The example that we gave clearly falls within and perhaps below both of those. This project would not have to be, nor would it be, registered with that. The reason being that, you know, with the MPHU, you get bonus density. Well, this density of this is not being increased. So there would be no reason for us, you know, to ask for something that, you know, in our minds is not warranted. Secondly, there would not be the cost of monitoring perhaps planning staff or whomever would be monitoring and directing that program. The reality for us is that the market will clearly dictate if we are not competitive in the rate of the lot on a monthly basis, then of course it would not lease up. And that's obviously very important to us for the financing of the project. Correspondingly, the MPHU program, which when you go back, that was something that we had talked about with the county, in fact on this project and on another project. This has the advantage of meeting both objectives and really having that rental component with a single-family home, whereas mostly the rental component under the rental program is for multifamily. So I think this strikes a much better balance in that with the opportunity to buy and own the home on a rented lot, that there can still be single-family home ownership. My partner, Mr. McCray, and I had done a number of tax credit apartments throughout the county. And the availability of land to be able to do that today, we hit that at a time, we did, I don't know, six or seven of those projects in succession. The availability of doing that does not exist today. So I do believe that this has it has the added dimension of single-family home ownership, which some people may find to be more desirable than a multifamily situation.
You mentioned there were two options for purchase. Could someone buy the lot?
The financing of this project would probably dictate that the lots would need to be rented. I would believe that the lender on the project would say there's going to be 301 rental lots. But there would not be a restriction that would force someone to buy the home to place on the lot. We believe that we can provide financing that would allow that person to rent the home that would be placed on the rented lot.
Okay, but at no time is the guy ever going to own the property,
the land. If the underlying financing would permit it, we would definitely do it because it would would help reduce the debt. So I mean, we would seek to do that with the lender, but I can't say for a certainty that the underlying lender would accommodate that. But that that would be. I think that in the statistics of that I read in the comprehensive plan, that there's a proliferation, and the majority of the people living in manufactured homes were living on a lot rent situation. But I don't think it's certainly not uniform.
The commercial area, where would that be located?
That's
to the left.
If you have 100 lots, you're entitled to 1 acre of zoning, 1 acre of commercial zone.
That's correct.
So that zoning then is a CR1 zoning?
No. It's not.
It'll stay GRRPC, but they're allowed to do 3 acres of commercial use in that area. It doesn't give it a CR1 zoning.
Does the what is allowed to go there? Is it similar to?
Similar to what's permitted in the B1 and the C1.
In the B1 and the C1?
Yes.
Okay. Would they come back for approvals?
They would come back for a site plan review because it's an RPC, yes.
Okay. Because that's inside of the RPC?
Yes.
The DART bus placement?
Yeah, where is that?
Is that inside the community?
No, it's on the west side of the entrance.
So it's on Route 9. It's on.
It'll be on 16.
16.
That was a requirement of
Del Doc with a bench, off, a shelter, everything. Shelter. Yes. Yep.
The amenities that are shown here, are they also going to be offered in?
Yeah, that was a question that we had, and if I'm correct, we would have to come back for. Do we have to come back for another site plan review? Because I really wasn't clear the specificity. I knew that an RPC is layout specific, but I didn't know the degree of specificity.
It would come by.
Huh?
It would come by for site plan. Yes.
But they're showing a clubhouse and a dog walking park, and are all of those amenities that are submitted here part of your presentation?
Yes.
The conservation easement that you spoke about.
Mm-hmm.
Where is that on the plan? And B, what happens to it if it isn't accepted?
It's this, the outer 100 feet, mark 100 feet.
It's the, on the plan, it does state, we show 100-foot buffer along the eastern side of the property line. We show it along the northern side of the property line. If you take into account the buffer and the wetland area of Southbridge Branch, and then there's 100-foot that continues along the north, down the west, and work on, again, the bald leg of a boundary, and it just continues down to the southern part, the southwestern part, I should say, of the property. And again, that was all that area here is a minimum 100 feet. Some areas it's a little bit more than that, but it's a minimum of 100 feet. And that all totals approximately 26 acres per land.
And I recognize that you offered it to the conservation group, and they haven't responded.
They have not responded. And if they were not to accept it, we would seek other state agencies, or we could put it under the under a DENREC easement.
But so the $10,000 an acre for the forest that remains is off the table.
That's correct.
Are the lot sizes the same for single and double? And just
yes. The only difference would be the setbacks. So when a permit placement would come in, then it would be determined they would have to fit within one of those two setbacks.
Chairman, that's all the questions I have at this time.
All right, sir. We thank you. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So as I understand it, if I looked at the originally approved plan, the amenities are not any different than what you're proposing tonight. Is that correct?
Yes.
So the other approved plan had sidewalks where?
That, yeah, the sidewalks are on, one side?
Yes, the sidewalks are on one side of the road.
Okay. And how about on the originally approved plan?
One side of the road.
Okay. You threw me a loop on this preservation. Have we ever had any other buffers put in the preservation, Shane?
Not that I'm aware of.
Why would you do that?
Well, I think because of the interest in the Nature Conservancy, they originally, after we got the plan approved, they came back and sought to purchase the property. And we've had conversations with them and with the state. So following down the line of reasoning with them was that they were desirous of having additional land under which there would be, you know, no disturbance and that they could protect. So that's why we pursued that, that option with them. I've indicated to them that, but I have not gotten a response from them one way or the other, whether they're going to do that or not going to do that. And if the Nature Conservancy doesn't, then we were going to talk to Department of Natural Resources, whom we've had, some other conversations with as well. So I think that given at least in part where it's adjacent and contiguous, that we felt that would be something that if they were interested in buying it and they had an opportunity to get a conservation easement, without a cost associated to it, that would be something that would be advantageous to them. And from a practical point of view, the buffer itself has the, when you add it together, 26 acres is, it's a significant, it's a significant piece of the property, and we thought that it would be an advantage to do that. We did tell them that the one thing that we may look towards would be to, potentially a walking path. If we chose to do that, cross at certain intervals. We did tell them that.
So the benefit of doing it sounds like it might be a benefit to the developers because you wouldn't have to maintain those buffers.
I don't think it would be maintained.
So then what's the difference? If there's no maintaining by them, I'm just perplexed by this whole... the whole buffer piece, but I'll leave that alone.
I can answer that. The majority of the buffers that we're showing here in the 100 feet are wooded. Certainly by adding this, it's an added protection. I mean, we can, by donating this to the Nature Conservancy or quite frankly putting a conservation easement on there, there's certain requirements in those requirements through Denerec that you can't go in there and just clear cut 100 foot within that easement, so it's an added protection. But what it does is it adds a buffer to the Nature Conservancy. It adds buffers to adjacent lands from this development, which by you cannot go in there and just clear cut these buffers.
Well, maybe I'm just being a little thick-headed. Never mind. We're moving on rather than belaboring that point. What was originally in the area where the planned commercial area is now?
Nothing.
That was just open space before?
Correct.
Okay. And the only access you'd have would be through your entrance?
That's also
to the
correct. Right.
Okay. Setbacks in mobile home parks or manufactured home parks, Shane? How are they different than what they're requesting?
If it were a new manufactured home park,
right,
the minimum lot size is 5,000 square feet. The minimum setback would be 10 feet from all lot lines, 20 feet from a minimum separation distance of 20 feet from a unit on another lot, and they could not occupy more than 35% of the lot area. That's in a so-called park.
So ballpark, how's yours different than what you're requesting with these changes in setbacks? Because I heard some talk about 5-foot setbacks instead of 10-foot setbacks. And
five on the, for a double wide, it'd be 5 on the side. And 10 on a single wide, right?
Yeah, that's correct. On a double wide, it was 5 foot on the side, only to allow flexibility for placement of that double wide. If not, the way the double wides are manufactured and the way they come in, if they were 10 feet, that would only allow on a 75-foot lot, it only allows 55 feet. It doesn't allow much room past that to be. There's no flexibility. That means that all the double wides would have to be perpendicular to the road, up and down, all the for the lots that are going to have the double wide.
So these lots are designed to be 7,500 square feet?
They're all 7,500 square foot. The smallest is 7,500 square feet.
Okay.
So what that does is it allows flexibility to be able to put the house parallel to the road, as well as perpendicular, but that's with the reduced setbacks.
So basically, you're requesting us to circumvent what our regulations would be for a new manufactured home park reducing these setbacks.
In the RPC, there it allows flexibility for waivers from the.
It's a little rounder. No, okay.
Well,
I have no further questions right now,
Mr. Johnson. The older parks that were established prior to zoning, they have 5-foot setbacks from all the lot lines.
Which is why we're having such a mess right now with all those mobile home parks, those older mobile home parks and the storage buildings and additions and everything else that happens.
Right.
Agreed.
That's probably why we got the 10-foot setbacks.
Correct.
Plus fire marshal.
Fire code, yeah.
Let's tell you.
Okay, Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Dyer, just on the setbacks, the advantage, I guess, your position of having the setbacks would be that the front door of the manufactured home would actually face the street. So
right.
For the passerby on the streetscape, you're not seeing the gable or eaved end of a
right.
manufactured home.
And our lot would be a minimum of 7,500 square feet, not 5,000, which I think is what would be if it were a under a GR park, yes.
And just so I don't have to review the minutes on that, Mr. Davidson said 25-foot setback on the front for a double wide, 5 on the side, 10 on the rear.
That is correct, yes.
And I think I've messed this up. On the single wide, it's 12 feet on the front, 14 from the side, and 5 from the rear?
10 feet from the side and 5 on the rear.
10, okay. Burton answered most of my questions. I did notice on the plan it appears as though you have 3 cul-de-sacs and the rest are either dead ends or future connectors. Some of the streets just sort of stub out.
Yes, because of the
on sheet 10.
Because the stub streets mainly serve one lot.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, we just stubbed it instead of putting a cul-de-sac on there, and that's okay.
And
that was approved by the engineering department.
How about fire marshal?
Yes.
Is there a landscape plan that was submitted?
No, we did not submit.
Okay, I think that was one of the suggestions, and maybe following up for Mr. Burton, I think the letter dated January 31 from County Council, January 31, 2011, indicated to you on the Cascade Properties LLC that the regional wastewater facility would have to be substantially under construction for this project to go forward. Is that, that's in the exhibit book. I just kind of want to share that with you. The The one letter that we got with quite a few signatures on it under his noted number three on need, the signers of this letter of petition mentioned the possibility of an odor. I'll get into that on the ag uses, but they're talking about that there is or there may be some placement of spoils by spray, irrigation, or injection nearby. Is that correct?
No, sir. The what was designed was there's going to be a pump station that will be located near the clubhouse location there that will pump the sewage to the town of Milton.
Okay.
That's the Tidewater has the CPCN. Tidewater has indicated that they can handle the wastewater from the site. And I think what that's referring to is the original application. Okay. In part of the original application, we were doing an on-site facility, but that got removed during the design because Tidewater was going to own and operate on the site, but that was prior to them purchasing the wastewater system for the town of Milton. They have capacity, and they're going to, since they are have the CPCN for this, they will be taking care of the wastewater.
All right. Thank you. And typically in a development, you usually put ag notices in that notifies people when they're buying a lot that there are agricultural uses nearby, et cetera, et cetera. How would that be affected by this, or would you provide any type of notice if I'm not purchasing that lot, so I'm not getting a deed with the ag notices, but I'm perhaps locking into a contract where I'm going to rent long-term? Don't you think, for the protection of everybody involved, that I would want to know that, hey, there's associated noise, dust, nighttime operations?
And exactly. The same notification that would go in to a purchaser would go into the lease.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Okay. Mr. Ross?
You know, there's some things I kind of like about the project, especially the DART bus stop. Has there been any thought given to some kind of program with your tenants, your land tenants, to help subsidize them to use that DART bus stop? You know, some financial encouragement, discount on ridership or something of that nature?
I hadn't really considered it, but I mean, it sounds like a very good idea. The interesting thing, when we originally proposed which was Mr. Daly, proposed that to DART, was they were very interested in the actual location. I suppose the spacing of where they actually stop was very conducive to their particular route, which I think was Route 303 or whatever it was. So that was very encouraging to us because they do provide this, you know, this service that goes, as it indicated, Dover to Georgetown. So that particular element lent itself very well to the comprehensive plan, because part of Sussex County comprehensive plan is not only to provide housing, but to provide it proximate to transportation, you know, availability, number one, and then being on the, you know, the east-west corridor also reinforces that. So that in our mind distinguishes this particular location and project from many others where subdivisions are remote or, you know, not on a thoroughfare and not on a designated, you know, DART drop-off point.
I agree. It's one thing we've had in trying to locate a moderately priced or affordable housing in rural right. areas that doesn't have access to public investments like DART, and this one does, and it makes it unique. The setbacks, I don't want to beat this thing too much, but the front, so the side setbacks are going to be tight, but the front and back, how much space is going to be in the front and back of the house? The double wide or the single wide?
Well, it depends on which double way wide. You face it.
Yeah. Good.
I mean, you're going to have you're asking for 5 feet on the side so you can get it facing the street, if I understand that. So that's going to open up space.
I can't tell you this, that the two things. The fire marshal regulates it. There will have to be a 20-foot separation. So if one house is, if we utilize on the one setback the five.
You got 15 on
the other. We have to have 15 on the other. So it almost dictates that on the other that it's going to have to be a double wide. Secondly, the majority of the lots within this subdivision does back up to open space. So, I mean, there are, in this area here, these lots do back up to each other, but the majority of these lots all back up to open space.
And are you going to have any rules on people putting up temporary sheds, you know, storage utility sheds? Because one of the issues we've had when you have these minimal setbacks is people end up adding a porch. You know, they become permanent residents, you know, and they add a little bit here. And next thing you know, you got a little shed over there. And next thing you know, you got a little something over here. And pretty soon we end up with two neighbors who are basically back to back with stuff.
I think
and this is what I think. I don't know about the other. I'm concerned about it because we've run into this, and that's why we don't have 5-foot setbacks anymore.
I think what you're talking about is, and again, I don't want to speak for you. It's a two-pronged issue. You know, the houses are very close together, but also there's not, as you said before, open space surrounding those houses. So if you take a manufactured unit and you put it end to end where the side is facing the front of the house, that's going to leave you with a substantial front yard and with a substantial backyard. If you put a gable end in the front, and that's going to leave you with substantial side yards. I think some of the problems, and I'm not totally up to speed with what is happening in some of these other manufactured home communities, is that there's not only there's no space, but they've gone out and they've built in places where there's no space, and that has compounded drainage problems and all that. And these lots being 50% bigger than what's required, you're going to put them, like you said, one or the other way. They're still going to be 20 feet apart, but there's going to be plenty of space on that lot to place accessory structures, which, you know, I don't think we've gone down that road, but I think it would the rules on that would be similar to other residential communities in Sussex County, and the ones I've been involved with generally allow that on, with restrictions. But, you know, certainly setbacks and things like that are part of those restrictions. So I think the issue is you're still going to have open space on that lot. There's places to put it which will still allow you to drain the lot and have them far enough from the neighbors. I hope that
Makes sense. I think I understand where you're going. And then the individual trailers versus the double wides. We've had issues in the past where people want to combine two single wide lots and add additional double wide lots. How are we addressing that issue?
Combine. I'm not sure I
You mean take two lots and combine them as
take
one?
Two, they have a single. They've been approved for so many single wide lots, but somebody decides, you know, I really like a double wide, so let me rent two lots and I'll move a double wide into what was one single wide lot because they're different dimensions. Are you?
Well, I think again, the fire marshal is still going to govern that. In that, if you have, say, someone moves out their home and you come in and the next person comes in with a double wide, they're still going to have to meet the spacing requirements of the other two lots.
With this application, the single wide lot is the same size as the double wide lot. Yeah, they're all the same size. The minimum lot size is 7,500 square feet.
Okay. All right.
That's that was the one thing I wanted to add. In the example that Mr. Daly reviewed, a 1,400 square foot home on a single floor on a 7,500 square foot lot still yields 6,100 square feet of open space. So whether you put it this way or whether you put it this way, you're going to have more open space than what the normal 5,000 square foot lot would be in a new GR layout. So that's encouraging, and I believe that you answered Mr. Johnson's question. Is even with the minimum allowed, the fire marshal still will not allow two of those in succession. So that addresses your question, which was a good one. I'm sorry.
No, that's good. That's all, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Mr. Abbott. Any
questions?
All right, gentlemen, if you'll take a seat nearby, we'll see if there's anyone here that has an interest in your application. Is there anyone who would like to speak in favor of change of zone number 1721, Captain's Way Development, LLC? Is there anyone here that would like to speak in opposition to change of zone number 1721? Yes, sir.
Good
Yes, my name is John Herbert, and I live at 21122 Orchard Road, Allendale, Delaware. Mm-hmm. There's almost too much to say. I mean, too many. One thing, right from the get-go, too many unanswered questions. I know you ask a lot of questions, and I didn't hear a lot of direct answers, like the commercial. What is actually going? What it sounded like it would be to sell trailers at this commercial rig a lot, but also it sounded like he said maybe convenience store. A lot of I never did understand exactly what it was, but that's okay though. Another thing, they imply that this area is all mixed residential and a lot of mobile homes. Orchard Road has 12 homes, and two single ones and one double one. I'd say that's the majority of single family homes. Another thing, in general, this piece of property, starting down on Route 30, going west, is Isaac's Ag Preservation. Mm-hmm. Next to that is 800 acres of Nature Conservancy. Mm-hmm. Preservation again. Next to that is my parents' farm, the Herbert Farm. That's agriculture. Next to that is this piece of property that they're wanting to develop. Next to that on the other end, going west still, all the way to Holly Tree, is the Carpenter Farm. And that they're not into development. They're Jim Carpenter out on Carpenter Road. They own that. They have irrigation in. Everything in this area is preservation or agriculture. And from, I don't have this as an actual fact, but from what I understand, it is one of the largest undeveloped areas in Sussex County outside of Burnt Swamp. It's out of place. I had made so many notes. One thing, they speak of Newmarket Village. Newmarket Village has been there way before zoning was there. That's the start of that back probably in the 60s. Zoning plan was October 68. That place has 39 empty lots in it right now. We need more empty lots. As far as costs, I'd heard that $400 per lot rent. I didn't hear what maybe I missed it, but whether that would stay there as long as the tenant stayed. From what I understand about these other mobile home parks, they keep escalating. Did you hear that?
They didn't make any representation as to what they were going to, how that was going to work. They just used the 400 in their example.
And another thing added to that, I heard him say $30,000 for a trailer, single wide mobile home, but I don't think I ever heard the final payment. Like if you leased the mobile home and leased the lot, was that made?
Yeah, it was $783, I believe, is what they testified to.
I missed it.
Versus about $1,100 and some that they suggested would be a similar.
$734.
Yeah, that was.
I guess I got it here. $783.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Another thing, as far as being close to work, I can't see any place within 10 miles of that area providing $42,000 a year jobs. Maybe you can come up with one. It just seems like it's too far away from, as Harbison's about 11, 12 miles away. There's nothing real close to as far as working. And not only is going back a little bit to the ag preservation of the area across Route 16, where the 800-acre Ponder Track is in Isaacs, that's also Nature Conservancy. That's more preservation. And down right in front of where this gas station and where this is right across from that is the state forestry owns. So there's more preservation. And in between the two, and they go all the way back to Sawmill Road. In between that, I own 100 acres. And it's in a tree farm. This is preservation land. This is not development land. And as far as I'm confused too about. I don't think 26 acres of buffer constitutes preservation. If it were 26 acre of wide width going through, so the animals, that's part of the reason for preservation, so the animals can travel from one place to the other. You don't cut them off in the middle. If it were made so that it wasn't, if it weren't a round place, instead it was a quarter through there, it would be a different story. That's my thinking. I don't know at all.
I don't disagree with you, and it is puzzling as to why the conservation folks don't buy the ground. You know, I mean.
Well, like okay.
Said, everything else.
I have
out
been
there,
in contact. That's another question I have. How long ago was this deal made with Nature Conservancy? Because I have talked with Andy McManus in the last week or two. He made no mention.
Well, I don't think any deal's been made, sir.
I mean, he didn't even indicate to me that that anybody had presented him any kind of idea.
He may not be the person that they present this kind of thing to.
Well, I think I went to talk to Richard Jones. Roger Jones is gone now, but and they directed me to Andy because he is the land man.
Did they express an interest in buying the property?
Yes, they've expressed interest over the years. Through and he and Mr. Dyer knows who I am, and he knows, and I don't know for sure whether Kate Hackett, who was with Nature Conservancy, presented to him personally, but through her, there have been some talks back and forth. Mm-hmm. But Nature Conservancy was always down here with Price, and he was always up here. I'm not condemning either one of them. You know, you always want to get as much as you can, and you always want to pay as least as you can.
Sure.
But I also talked to Kate Hackett, works for Delaware Wildlands now. She's the executive director. Mm-hmm. And between us, we thought that if there was some way, and this may still be possible, I don't know, it's all according to Mr. Dyer, that the Forestry Department, Department of Agriculture, Delaware Wildlands, the Nature Conservancy, and maybe some, I think Sussex County also has some interest in buying preserving areas. There's some, I'm not sure what it is, but could get together that this maybe could be purchased, and it would be a good, and it might even be a good place for a county recreational site. But it just seems out of place for a mobile home park. And I don't know if there's no sense in you having this letter that I wrote. I didn't write it all.
Well, there might be.
So there's no sense in my, I'm not going to read it or anything like that, because it's just.
But if you want to have it in the record, you can just give it to our.
Oh, you've already got it.
It's the same one I handed
out.
Oh,
you have.
Oh, okay, then. All right. I just want to make sure you got it in the record.
Yeah,
that's all.
Yeah,
you don't have to read it. You don't have to read it because it's already in the record. Okay.
No, one thing about traffic concerns there. Mr. Burton, he's been there, hasn't he? You know where the brick house is. That's where the entrance is. That is where the entrance is, right? They're right alongside the brick house. And I don't know if you've ever ridden down 16. Right past there, going to the east, there's a knoll in the road. And I've come across there hundreds and hundreds of times because I live there. And it's sometimes very deceiving. You can pull out of there and there'll be a car coming. And in Allendale, without a town police force, although they have had one lately, seems like Milton likes to go over to Allendale to police the town at 120 miles an hour. I can just see one day being a terrible, terrible accident. And state police, I don't have a problem with them. They'll run 70 or 80, you can tell. But the Milton police, they must have been in town too long and wouldn't get out on that straightaway. They let it go. So really, it's a dangerous place to have an entrance, and there is no other entrance. Another thing, looking at the plot of the thing, to get a fire way back in the corner, back behind Fleming's property, and to find your way back there, it looks like it'd be difficult. Plus, it's a long trip. Another thing, I don't know, as far as costs, being Tidewater is going to do all the water and the sewer, there's going to be quarterly charges. I don't remember if that was mentioned or not. But it's going to be a very expensive project, putting the sewer and the water in there. it's not going to be cheap running all that stuff all over there. And is that figured in for this so-called low-cost housing?
Well, I can't speak for the applicant, but typically those things would all be built into your rental price, except the whatever quarterly charges the individuals might be obligated to pay, just like any other sewer.
Right.
You know, I mean, that would be the same pretty much right. Wherever you went.
And the thing about changing to GR, unless I'm mistaken, unless you change the rules, single-wide mobile home can't be put on a piece of property less than 10 acres.
It can in a GR zone.
Exactly. That was my point.
Right. And that's why they're asking.
That's why they're asking for GR.
Sure. Well, I suspect because it was already approved for 301 single-family residences.
Another question. That's another question. That should have run out March 23rd, about two, three years ago. What happened there?
Well, we extended
due to economic conditions.
But
how many times did you extend it?
Well, I think we've extended it once for three or
end of this year.
I'm pretty sure it's to the end of this year, but they haven't.
So when was it approved? In 2006?
I don't remember, sir.
Mr. Chairman, it got final approval by the commission January 27th of 2011.
So it has how long to run?
5 years from the date it was recorded.
Not even going to expire.
So you've got a ways to go yet. You've got another.
You got approved when?
The final plan was approved in 2011, and then you have 5 years after that.
I misunderstood. I thought it was when it was approved.
Final plan. Yeah, final plan. So they've got till 2016.
Is there any length of time between it's approved by you and county council? So you have to have the final plan in?
It would have been under the 1 year, but then they kept getting time extensions.
Yeah. It typically, it's approved for a year, and you could get two 1-year time extensions. Now they get approved for 3 years because the problem we were having was everybody was coming in asking for extensions. We had a line from where you're standing out to the street.
Yeah, you don't know that.
So, no.
It just seems to me that... allows a lot of leeway there because of so long, it's been such a time lapse from when we first presented. I have one more question is, and I looked on there, is the commercial land going to be entered by the...
Mr. Davidson, would you point out to...
By the entrance?
Would you point that out?
I get this is probably not. I wonder. There is a mobile home there that's a relative of mine lives in that he's apparently never gotten a deed to. I guess that's something not to be addressed here.
Well, mobile homes don't have deeds. They have titles.
He's selling a piece of property. It was supposed to be his property, and he never got a deed to the piece of property.
That's another department.
Yeah, right. Okay. No problem.
it's another department.
Let's see if I can figure, if you got another minute or so.
Sir, we've got all night. I don't have to be anywhere.
I don't have to be anywhere
until 7 o'clock tomorrow morning.
I don't want to be here.
Just get comfortable, and I will too.
Yeah. I'm all right. My nerves are already shot now. One other thing about this mobile homes versus stick-built homes, mm-hmm. and hopefully they don't use Home Run. I don't know if they use Home Run or not, because Home Run comes out of Maryland. But there's no mobile home manufacturers in Delaware. We're not helping our county with jobs. Mm-hmm. We're helping Pennsylvania with jobs. That's a drawback of mobile homes. One other thing, and this may be a little off the wall, and it may be a little out of thing, but I just talked to somebody I know in construction, and this developer seems to use a slate prep construction man, that it doesn't come from Delaware. It comes out of Maryland. It's another thing that bothers me. Now, I might be out of line, but this was pretty strong words from somebody that has tried to do work for this man, for this developer.
Well, I know a little bit about construction too, and how that all happens, and it probably has something to do with the price, don't you think? I imagine it's got something to do with the price.
The person I'm thinking of would probably could be competitive.
Well,
and he's local. But I mean that's his prerogative. I'm trying to prove is that, you know, are we putting an expense here, or are we helping the county?
Mm-hmm.
Are we trying to create jobs? Are we putting more pressure on the fire and police and thing?
Okay.
Am I legitimate? I'm not.
Well, sure. I mean, it's your time. You tell us whatever you want us to know. I mean, certainly, I'm not going to argue with you. My goodness.
I like to argue. I know you'll give me a hard time. I think I'd
only give you a hard time if you say something I know isn't true.
I must have been pretty good so far.
Some of it's, you know, now your opinion's neither true nor false. It's your opinion, so I'm not going to challenge you on anything you think.
Me,
but if you,
I,
but if
you
give me a fact that's not right and I know it, I'll
there's so much information that came out, and I really couldn't write all the stuff down.
And that's why we do it this way, because you know there's another hearing after this. There's another one in front of the county council where you're all going to do all this all over again. And that's so you have now. You'll be fine. This is the way the process works. Is that all the information gets out now, and this group here, we make a recommendation to county council, and then county council will make a final decision after their public hearing.
I've been through it.
So if you've been through it, you know there'll be some time between now and the next hearing. So there'll be time to digest it and time to plan your strategy for the next.
No, they could say yes, and if you say yes, they could say no.
And you know what? You can get up here tonight and say one thing, and get up in front of county council and say something completely different. And so can they. So, you know.
It's a game.
Well, it's not a game, but it's a process that's pretty cumbersome, but it works pretty well. Usually comes out.
One thing that I think somebody asked a question about Odor's farm or something.
Somebody said something.
They answered it with their odors and farms, and that's not what was meant in that letter. If you read that letter, it says about nearby farms, and one of them is back. This is the Hudson farm. They spray, put sewage out there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another farm that they are putting the byproduct of Dogfish Head Brewing.
Well, this is a right-to-farm state, and they have to be given a notice before they get in there.
I just wanted to clear that up. And it's all legal. It was all soil scientists.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That the farmers,
everything was done correctly in both places.
Right.
But there are those things that are there and existing now.
Right, and that's a risk that the developer takes.
And as far as I thought, I heard somebody say, Nature Conservancy has no clear cutting. They're in any woods here anyway. This corner right here. There's no woods here. See all that area there? There's no woods there. This is the only place there would be woods.
Okay.
I surrender.
No, you don't have to surrender.
No, I think I've run out of wind.
Listen, I appreciate your patience this evening and your comments, and I can assure you they'll all be taken under advisement. So.
And my last thing is, I'd like to see a developer get his money out of it, but I'd like to see it. And I'd be glad to try to be the mediator among the state. And I know some people in Ag Preservation. I know Mike Valenti with the State Forestry. I know Kate Hackett. I know Andy, and with Nature Conservancy. I'd be glad to be a mediator if we could work something out conservation.
Suggest to you is that you talk with them about that. I'm sure that
that they're businessmen, and if you all can arrive at a price, I'm sure that it could be bought.
I just kind of want to be at the record so that.
Sure. Okay. Well.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Welcome, sir. Thank you. Thanks for being here. Anyone else like to speak in opposition? Anyone on the commission have any questions?
I do, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
I have a
question,
a couple quick ones, hopefully.
For the applicant?
Are these going to be new homes, or are you going to be accepting used manufactured homes?
I don't... I was assuming that everything would be new, but I'm not going to make a representation because... until we have the financing and everything in place, I don't know that I'll know that until a particular time in the future. I don't.
Fairly unusual for a new place to take.
Yeah, like older homes.
Yeah. It's doing very well. You're right.
You know, but you're right.
If you have,
and also your bank's going to have something to say about that too.
Yeah, I think the financing will probably make a much. More clear-cut answer to that.
And since you started to get up a while ago, Mark, could you show me what areas are not going to be buffered on the others? Yeah. Because what I heard was you said change it from all to most. So I wasn't sure what...
There's two areas that don't have the buffer from adjacent property line. Area here, and those two areas don't. They do have a minimum of 30 feet, but they don't have the 100 foot setback that the rest of the boundary line.
But 30 feet is the minimum.
30 foot is the minimum.
Okay.
Anything else?
Very good.
Mr. Dyer, I have one other question for you that I'm going to ask mainly on behalf of the opposition. I've stated my assumption that you are a reasonable businessman, and I'm going to allow you to confirm that. And I'm just going to ask you that if these conservation groups were to approach you with a reasonable offer for your property, could it be bought?
Yes.
All right.
So. And we've in fact met with the state, and we've sent. You know, she gave what was the lady's name?
Do you remember?
No. I think it was Elaine. Yeah. And so we met with them. We drove to Dover. Mr. Daly and I drove to Dover, talked to her. It's been some time since we had spoken to Kate Heck. She was at Nature Conservancy previously, but. So the answer to that question is yes.
Okay, well, there you go. You guys can go at it. All right. Anyone else have any questions on the commission? All right, then. There being none, we'll close the public hearing. We thank you for being with us this evening, and you may feel welcome to stay until the end, and see if we make a decision, or you may wish to call the office in the morning.